Rusty Quill presents The Magnus Archives.
Episode 72, Takeaway.
Say that again. I've put you on speaker.
Maxwell Rayner. Have you heard of him?
Yes. Why?
Who is he?
He was a cult leader back in the 90s. I don't know about now.
The Church of the People?
The People's Church of the Divine Host.
Right.
Is he involved in a case or something?
We're on our way to arrest him. Hello?
I'm here. You found him?
Not me, but I'm one of the ones going in. There's a lot of section guys here, so I thought I'd give you a call. Any advice?
Bring torches.
Torches?
As many as you can get your hands on. How many do you have?
There's a firearms team here, so we should have plenty of tactical lights. So you reckon it's going to get dark?
Basira? Hello?
John, can you hear me?
Oh, damn. Right. Statement of Craig Goodall regarding his explorations of an abandoned chicken and kebab shop in Walthamstow. Original statement given 20th October 2009. Audio recording by Jonathan Sims, head archivist of the Magnus Institute, London. Statement begins. Feel like I should be upfront with this right at the beginning. I'm probably a cannibal. I don't know for sure, but the likelihood is high. You ever hear of Han Yong? Otherwise known as John Hahn. I guess it depends on what corners of the internet you lurk in, or what tabloids you were reading in 2004. If you haven't, let me explain. John Hahn ran a small takeaway on Higham Hill Road in Walthamstow. Weirdly enough, it wasn't a Chinese. It just served kebab, chicken, burgers, the usual. Well, it went out of business in May 2004, when Mr. Hahn was arrested for murdering his wife, Lan Ying. So far, so mundane, right? Except for the fact that over the previous 2 weeks, John Hahn had been disposing of the body the way only a takeaway owner can. He went full on Sweeney Todd. Now the thing is, I live just off Higham Hill Road, and I used to go to that takeaway all the time. I definitely went there a few times in May 2004. I haven't been able to find out from any of the news reports exactly what he was selling the meat as, but over the course of the month, I definitely had chicken wings, doner kebab, chicken kebab, and a burger. So there's a very good chance I ate some of her. It's weird, though. Everything I've found online says that human meat is meant to be very similar to pork, but nothing I was served was like that. I mean, pork is pretty different from beef or lamb or chicken, and I can't see how it was being passed off as any of them. But he must have managed it somehow. Maybe the doner? It was so heavily spiced, it would have disguised the flavour, I guess. I don't know how we would have made it look like doner meat, though. It's very distinctive, and I was always under the impression that you needed to order those huge, rotating columns of things specially. Regardless, the fact of the matter is that I am almost certainly a cannibal. You know the weirdest part, though? The bit I regret most is that I don't know which of the meats it was. I feel like if I've been tricked into eating a person, I might at least have learned what a human being tastes like. And I don't really have a problem with the idea in any sort of moral sense, at least. I know how that sounds, and I'm certainly not okay with murder, not to mention the issue with prion diseases, but the actual act of eating meat that comes from a human, I'm fine with it. I can't help but feel that anyone happy to eat other meats is something of a hypocrite if they're not at least theoretically fine with eating human. There's nothing inherently special about us. We feel as much pain, see the world with the same eyes as a real pig. Meat is meat. That's what John Hahn said when they arrested him. The only thing he said. Meat is meat. None of this really changes anything. Whether or not I've eaten chicken wing made of person doesn't actually factor into this, I guess. Except that it's the reason I always kept an eye on the old takeaway. After John Hahn was arrested, it was never sold on. Not surprising, it's the sort of history that people tend not to want in their property investments. I didn't move away, though. I kept right on living there, and walked past the old boarded-up shop almost every day. As far as I'm aware, it never actually had a name. I mean, it must have, but it wasn't clear from the front. Over the door was a large, hand-painted sign that simply read, FOOD, in bright white capital letters, while a neon sign that protruded from it glowed with the word GRILL on both sides in bright red. As the months of its closure started to turn into years, the old green paint on the window panes gradually started to fade, and the large metal sheets that covered the windows and door were almost lost beneath a sea of posters and flyers advertising club nights and escorts. Sometimes, if the light hit it just right, I could lean in and see inside through the tiny holes in the steel. I could see the bright shine of the fryer, the glass of the heating drawer, the tall column of metal that would have rotated the kebab. It all seemed somehow too clean for it to be so abandoned, and I was sure I could even see the vivid colours of soft drink cans in the clear-fronted fridge. It was a grey, dull afternoon when I heard it. There was a miserable rain. The sort that doesn't even fall, it just seems to hang in the air, speckling your face with a fine, soaking mist. There wasn't a single patch of sky that disrupted the uniform gloom as I walked past the old takeaway. I stopped for a second, staring at the broken old building as I so often did, when I heard a sound from inside. It wasn't a loud sound, like something small and light falling to the floor. I went closer, listening, but the sound didn't come again. Leaning in, I tried to see through to the inside of the building, but the overcast day didn't give enough light to see by. I stood up, tried to convince myself that I had imagined it, when a cold breeze blew down, cutting through my coat, and I heard laughter. It was so quiet, I could have imagined it. Or maybe it came from one of the houses nearby, but I looked around and the windows were as dark and empty as the sky. I turned back towards the shop and noticed for the first time the missing bolts along the edge of the panel that covered the side window. It was ever so slightly ajar. The sound of movement came again, soft and furtive from inside. Someone was in there, I knew that much at least. So I left and called the police. I walked to the pub across the road, bought a pint of pale ale, and sat outside on the wooden benches. The drizzling rain diluted my beer slightly, but I didn't mind. I waited. 20 minutes later, a police car pulled up, and I sipped my drink as I watched them open up the door and head into the old takeaway. Through the now opened entrance, I could still see the faded remnants of crime scene tape flapping gently in the wind. There was a sound of shouting, and I saw them pulling out a teenage white boy holding a can of red spray paint. Kid couldn't have been more than 14 with a ratty old hoodie and brand new sneakers the same color as his paint can. The cops must have talked to the kid for a good 10 minutes before they finally took the paint and let him go with a warning, like I knew they would the second I saw him. Figures. The cops locked the old takeaway back up and went back to get in their car. The rain was coming down heavily now, and the one holding the spray can lost his grip on it. It wasn't a long drop from his hand to the pavement, but it must have hit a sharp stone or something, because when it clattered onto the ground, part of it split open. The red seeped out of it, mixing with the flowing rainwater in a river of color that made me very uneasy. The cops didn't seem to care, they just got back in their car and drove away. I watched the place until I finished my drink. I wanted to see if they'd realized they'd still left the window panel partially open, where the kid had probably got in. If they did, they didn't come back to fix it. I was soaked to the bone by that point and decided to head home and get dry. My sleep that night wasn't great. I kept dreaming of a paint can impaled on a rotary kebab skewer. The liquid dripping from it bubbled and boiled in the heat. But it wasn't paint. I woke up the next day bleary-eyed and exhausted, and my mind was still on that open window. I just couldn't shake it. And I knew I wouldn't be able to relax until I'd got to see the inside of that place, so I called a friend of mine, Leroy Yates, and told him what was going on. His hobby was somewhere in between urban exploration and housebreaking, so I wanted to talk it through with him. He was over in Homerton and offered to come help me out. I told him I reckoned I could handle it, but that if I didn't check in with him in an hour or so, he should come down, in case I had trouble of any kind. I grabbed a quick bite of cold sausage for breakfast, got my big torch and a small pry bar, then headed out into the morning. The rain had stopped, but the sun still hadn't come out, and the wet shine seemed to weigh heavily on everything. There was nobody on the street. Most were probably at work already. The old takeaway sat there, the letters of food now grey and lifeless. For a second I thought I saw the red neon grill sign flicker, but I'm pretty sure that was just my imagination, as I know the tubes were busted. I slipped around the side and found the metal panel covering the window was still ajar. I'm a bit bigger than a scrawny teen vandal, but it didn't take much coaxing before there was a gap wide enough for me to squeeze my way inside. The air was cold and clean. I was in what must have been the storeroom and food prep area. There wasn't much light filtering through the tiny holes over the windows, so I turned my torch on and cast it about. It looked like anything perishable had been removed from the place, but other than that it seemed untouched. Sealed cans of pickled vegetables, vats of oil, rows and rows of clean, shining equipment. There wasn't a speck of dust on any of it, though it certainly didn't seem like it was in use. My torch moved over the rest of the room until it fell upon the huge freezer. There were letters sprayed onto it, several inches high. It looked like this was what the kid had been doing. He'd been spraying the phrase, "Meat is meat," onto the door of the freezer, but the cops must have gotten him before he'd finished. So what was actually written upon the matte silver surface were the words, "Meat is me." I'm not going to pretend that a shiver didn't run right through me. It made me feel ever so faintly ill. In a fit of stubbornness, I decided that the only way to dispel this fear was to open the freezer, to know for sure that there was nothing inside, no meat of any sort. I walked over with a confidence I didn't really feel and gripped the handle. I took a breath and pulled. Inside the freezer was absolutely nothing. No meat, no ice, not even a chill. It hadn't been on in years. I let out a sigh of relief, which is when I heard a very quiet laughter from next to my feet. I shined my light